appreciate after the late night a lot of us had. Jim, did you go home and come back?
Yeah.
Wow. You get it. You get it. The award for the heroic. Okay. And David, did you go home and back? You stayed over? A smart man. That's why you're a supervisor. So we're what I'd like to do is reorder our agenda for this evening, or this morning, excuse me. It seems like evening. And have item number six, the senator's here. I'd ask him if he'd like to come forward and we have a seat all
lined up. I don't know. I'd like to be closer to the door.
Well, I'm hoping that's not too close to the door, and I'm hoping if anybody throws anything at you, they don't hit me. So we want to call the roll. How do we want to do this? We're going to call the roll and establish the quorum, and then we'll.
Bruner, Cortese.
Bruner's here.
Green, Haggerty, Jacobs Gibson, Bates.
Here.
Calra, Marr, Pifo, Ross, Gibbs, Joya,
here.
Wasserman,
here.
Sears,
here.
Wagon Connect, and Tobinek. Thank you.
Okay, quorum is present. So what I'd like to do is ask the senator if he'd like to make some remarks about his bill, and then after he's had a chance to do that, we'll open up for questions. Okay, Senator?
Thank you, Tom. Mr. Chair, you may also notice the executive body is here as well.
Yes, it's, we noticed that it's a noticed public meeting, and we appreciate you guys being here. Do you need to call a quorum? You need to call your own roll? I don't think so. Do you? Welcome. You guys are welcome to participate, obviously.
Bruce, did you not call Adrian or myself? Have we been dropped off the committee?
You guys have not.
Part of the bill, the mark.
We're only on after number six.
Jesse, I section.
We're on a special page two here on the agenda. So, Dodd.
Sorry, you were on special page two. We're on two pages.
I thought maybe we weren't invited to this.
You were invited.
Dodd, Kinsey, McKenzie,
present.
Sparing,
present.
Tissier.
Here.
My apologies.
Okay, sorry about that. Okay, Mark.
Well, I appreciate you taking me in this order, and I appreciate you giving me a few minutes. I know I've upset some of you, and I apologize for that. But I think it's hopefully will get to us to a place that I think it's important. And I'd like to start off with maybe an offer of truce on 1149. So 1149 passed out of two committees last week. It's now in appropriations. It'll be heard Wednesday. What I'd like to offer is I will tell the chair of appropriations that I would like it to be held in appropriations, and that means because of our time frame, that bill would, for all intents and purposes, die there. And I'd like to, what I would like in exchange for that is for us to develop some kind of discussion period for the rest of the year to see if we could come to some kind of agreement, how we could approve. If we come to an agreement, there needs to be improvement. I have strong feelings about that, obviously, but I think it's probably in the best spirit of things that we have the discussion. So I will start there and end there and answer any questions. So if just to be clear, 1149 I would let Senator Keogh, who's the chair of appropriations, and Senator Steinberg this afternoon that I would like the bill held in appropriations. I won't move it. And then I would like to maybe work with Tom or whoever to develop basically maybe a structure for us to have a discussion between now and the end of the year on if we could do regional governance better, if we can make this body more effective, and that would be it.
Okay. Senator, you know, a lot of us have wondered, you know, what was the purpose of the bill and what were your objectives and what were you hoping to accomplish?
I hope to stimulate some conversation. Well, some of you I've served with in this room before know that, you know, I've it's an area of interest to me. I just personally think, and this isn't directed at any individual, I think, or just at the Bay Area, if you look at the history recently of regional governance in the industrialized world, personally, I think the social model has changed of how people live and work. And I think a lot of places, whether it's London or Japan, Portland, Seattle, Atlanta, and the Bay Area, you can go into the ABAG library. I remember one meeting here where we had a virtual stack of discussions about regional governance. So I think my own view, having spent some time on this and having an interest in regional governance and how the people who we collectively represent live in a very different world and a different social model than 40, 50 years ago, metropolitan areas struggle with how best to serve them. So lots of people have looked at different models. When we had around AB, Jim Bell's bill, which will also move out of our committee as soon as the assembly bills start to move because there's been an agreed to compromise on that, so AB 57, if memory serves me, that will move. But when we were having regional hearings about that and talking about regional governance, we had one in San Jose City Hall, one in Oakland, and one in San Francisco. Half of the agenda was about that particular bill, and the other half was about looking at different models of regional governance and different challenges. And Betty Deacon from UC Berkeley, who's made a study of this, spoke at two of them, and she said, quite frankly, there is no model. Every region sort of evolves at its own pace and way. So that's, I think, personally, what we're struggling with. The bill, I know a lot of people have differences of opinion. I think as a policy, I'm proud of it. I don't want to blame my staff person, but I do want to introduce Art Bauer, who's sitting back there. He's a consultant for the Transportation Committee. Art, in his youth, many years ago, worked on the original statute that created MTC. So he himself has looked at this a lot. So personally, I like the bill. I knew that it was going to cause some consternation. I did hold it close to the vest because I personally thought that was necessary, but that's pretty much why I introduced it.
I thought you'd done a series of principles you were interested in achieving. Do you have those?
Well, we do have those, and I can give them out. Art, I think that's still on the desk or on my seat back there, so if you look at them, we had some principles. We're more than happy to put them out to you that I shared with Tom yesterday.
I think actually Joya was wanting to be next and then Green. Are you finished, Mark? I'm sorry. We don't want to
cut.
Okay. John?
I'm
sorry.
Well, I would hope that this group welcomes the Senator's proposal of holding it in appropriations and engaging in what I would hope to be honest discussions. Honest, not in terms of lying, but I mean actually honest and actually in an attempt to resolve this favorably down the road. So I would hope that this group actually takes the Senator up on his offer to engage in dialogue throughout the remaining part of 2012 on this issue. I've made it clear here many times before that I personally do think that a further examination of merging, consolidating, combining, whatever word you want to use, two, three, or four of the agencies makes sense. I've been engaged in that in my own county, been engaged in that with our city to the county. So, yes, I do think that the trend is going that way, and I think that the complexity of the Bay Area deserves some better, tighter coordination between our different policy streams. So I would personally be willing to participate in that if so selected. But I would hope, again, at a larger front, that this group actually takes the Senator up on his offer.
Yes, Joya. And then Ross?
Yeah. I appreciate the Senator's offer about having, a meaningful discussion. I think we all owe it to the public and to our own sense of how we perform here in the Bay Area to always look critically at ourselves to see are there areas where we can improve? Are there areas we can be more effective? Are there ways we can resolve some of the tensions that exist between the regional agencies. We all know we've dealt with issues, whether it's BCDC with its Bay Plan Amendment or the Air District with its issues on the CEQA guidelines, all very good policies, but there's sometimes been an inherent tension between those objectives and an objectives of another agency. And I think thinking how we can address those most effectively in an institutional way. So I think I think clearly having the opportunity and time to do that productively among ourselves with the senator can be a positive thing. And we look forward to it. I look forward to it.
Ross?
Yeah, thank you. Mark, what area, I know, like you said, there's no single metropolitan area that we could look at, but what, having looked at other metropolitan areas, what kind of model do you see that works in other places that could be imported here and appropriated here that would benefit us the most? I mean, where are we kind of lacking that other areas have succeeded?
I think that's one of the struggles, Mark, is there is no model, and every region is different. People like to look at Portland purists, but having gone to Portland a couple times, having sat in one of their most controversial hearings where Intel was asking them to move out their urban growth boundary, I think it works for Portland, but there's a million people who live in the metropolitan area of Portland, so it's very different. So I think that's one of the reasons why we've collectively struggled with this, is it's new. Social scientists like to say it usually takes public institutions about 40 to 50 years to catch up to social changes. I think that's what we're struggling with. I don't think there is an answer. I think that's why it would be helpful to, and having said that, excuse me, I mean, I talk to people now who were involved in Bay Vision 2020, and, people like Sonny McPeak. So I enter this personally with a little trepidation because people have tried it before in other areas and it's had mixed results, but I still think it's an important thing to have the discussion.
Okay, with the model of JPC as it is it, would it be more, are we looking more for, in this vision, for more efficacy in producing a to-do list for the other agencies, some type of guidance or vision from the JPC that currently isn't there now? Is that kind of where you're headed?
Well, my experience with the JPC was when Tom Torlakson had this seat, and I was still on three of the regional agencies. We had gone through a very contentious, as Mr. Heminger and Mr. Broadbent remembers, although Jack was at Region 9 at the time, when Felicia Marcus redesignated the area without putting us into a designation. We went through these long, difficult meetings, so I thought it was best. That bill started as a merger between ABAG and MTC, and that was contentious, to say the least. And if memory serves me, this body was the compromise in that, to try to coordinate better. And from what I've heard from both staff and people who have been part of JPC, it works, but there's some frustrations as well. So maybe that's part of the result we come to, is how do we make JPC work better?
Pierce?
Thank you. And thank you, Mark, for coming. Mark and I have worked together for a very long time, since we were both planning commissioners, so we've been around a lot of these issues for a long time. And I appreciate your offer, and for myself alone, I accept the offer gratefully. I think, what we have accomplished here in the last couple of years, as a result of a top-down mandate from SB 375, is a greater collaboration and working together among the various agencies. Can we do a better job? Sure. But I think we've done a good job of laying the groundwork, especially over the last year, between MTC and ABAG, with that as our point of commonality, if you will. And I think it's created a level of collaboration and, dare I say, even some trust, I think, that is building, and I think that's a good thing. I think that gives us a groundwork to start from, and I appreciate your offer to try to do this as a bottoms-up instead of a top-down effort, and I think if we really all work toward that as a goal, I think we'll get there. So I would gratefully accept your offer. Thank you.
Chair Tissier?
Yes, Mark, thank you for being here. I had the pleasure of serving with you on MTC in my early years. I did want to say a few things. What Julie said is very true. I think the groups together, because we've been doing Plan Bay Area and sustainable efforts and all, I think we've seen over time that we've worked very well together. I think, and I'll speak for my constituency, I mean, when this bill hit, there was a firestorm in our county. And our CCAG, which is all 20 cities, and our county immediately voted it down, saying, one, they were concerned about that additional layer of bureaucracy. They're really concerned about local control. And they really felt like MTC, ABAG, and BCDC, and the Air Board have really started working together to the point where we're trying to find efficiencies. I know you don't agree with us on the building, but that was one way to bring the staffs together to really create efficiencies. The JPC, I think we've been working harder over time to really make this group work. So that, again, as we all do things, we're not doing it in silos. We have to do some things in silos, but there's a lot of things that have a lot of commonalities, and we need to make sure the agencies are paying attention to each other. So for my constituency, they were very, very upset that this came down without really any discussion, going through committees very quickly, and really leaving the public out. And that was a real concern for me as well. And as you know, I've been somewhat vocal on this, but I do think that it's important that we do sit down and talk, because you've obviously heard from some of my constituency, I'm sure, but you know, to do it that way doesn't help any of us, and I appreciate your coming here and wanting to talk about it. I would certainly be happy to meet and talk further. I think this JPC is a perfect body to do a lot of what you were trying to accomplish, because I don't think as you add bureaucracy, I think you take it further away from the people than you do bringing it to the people. Last night, we had a joint ABAG-MTC meeting. I have to tell you, to me, it worked beautifully to show that those two agencies are working very well together. And we were able to come to an agreement last night to agree on the plan together with the same effort and emphasis on the areas that we care about. So I'm happy to accept the idea of a truce, but I also think, I hope you will take us very seriously, that there's an awful lot of people that don't want to see more bureaucracy. They want to see what we've got here working better and more closely together. So thank you.
Sparrow?
And Mark, I want to thank you for coming too, but you know, it's a little disappointing that you're not withdrawing the bill, because what it does is it makes us to continue to mobilize the opposition to this, because nobody knows where it's going. And I think if the bill was withdrawn and have this discussion and then reintroduce something, it would have been a much better strategy, because you know, I think there's so much uneasiness over this, and I don't think people want to let their guard down, and so I think the opposition will continue to grow, and it's unfortunate that it may be difficult to undo that. But the question that I would like to ask, Mark, maybe you can give us some insight, because there's a lot of us that are very puzzled about it, and you've had a lot of concern about the purchase of the building in San Francisco. The original intent was trying to bring all these regional agencies into one headquarters. We really felt that was a very smart move, the efficiencies of having everybody in one building, a combining of staff. You look at what's happening with MTC and ABAG now, and it just helps facilitate that. Can you just give us some insight as to what your concern, opposition to that? I mean, because we felt that it was help alleviating some of the challenges that the Air District was facing with their building. BCDC is looking for a new facility. It just seemed like, you know, all the stars were aligned to do that. We know there was a lot of controversy about the location, but, you know, to bring all the agencies together, we thought was a good thing. And so maybe you can give us some insight as to your thinking on that.
Well, on your first point, maybe it's just a question of semantics, but I will withdraw the bill. I mean, holding the bill withdraws the bill, so it's probably just a question of the terminology. So for the first point, the bill's withdrawn, dead. That's not to say that there couldn't be another one, and I think there should be tension. I mean, I think there's a natural tension when we go into this discussion. I know there's some trust on both sides that's been eroded, and I'm aware of that, and I believe in redemption, but I don't believe I understand that people are going to continue to be suspicious. I think, Jim, one thing I pride myself on over 20 years of being an elected official, I think I have a reputation normally for being honest. I do feel in my relationship with one of the entities that for whatever reason I feel less than comfortable doing that. I don't think we have to go through all that. I hope today would be a starting point. On the building, I have a suggestion for that as well. You could go to court and get a validation as to whether it's legal or not. We know what Ledge Council said. There is a legal vehicle for you to get a court to say it is legally authorized. I've asked the auditor to do, amongst other things, give another legal opinion. My perspective on that, having been here during that process through RM2, I think, and 3, and having talked to Brian Kelly in the Pro Tem's office, then Senator Parada, about having the Bay Area Toll Authority take control of the tolls, and reading the language in that bill, it's pretty clear to me as a representative of the East Bay, where most of the tolls are generated because of the traffic flow, that it was for seismic retrofit and maintenance and administration, but it's, at least as I read it, it's implied that that administration is supposed to be proportionate to administering the toll funds, which is what Ledge Council said. And Ledge Council, by the way, is very independent. I offered the questions. Tom can, it's constitutionally required that they're bipartisan. So maybe there's a way to solve that problem as well. I mean, that has generated some of my concerns.
Senator, I appreciate that, Jim, but I would really appreciate if we confined our discussion for the structure of this organization. I understand. That was a legitimate.
You know, Tom, I know you would, but we have an opportunity to need to take advantage of that, and because we're going to advance this dialogue and really come up with something meaningful.
I'm not criticizing this is a big that, piece, but the bill that's before us doesn't actually contain
that. There is language in here about purchasing the building.
Thank you.
It does have language.
Well, it has one little provision that might be considered.
It has language capping
so,
the administration.
I'm sorry. Let's move to...
Almost a food
Wasserman?
Fight.
Thank you. And I join in the chorus of thanking you for being here and engaging directly in the dialogue. And I do think the dialogue going forward is going to be very important. I also think that your principles tie in to much of what the JPC has started doing. I do think we need to be more concrete and clear about that. There's agenda items later in this morning's meeting to try and start doing that. But I particularly want to emphasize that I think your point of your in your principles about preparing a 20-year regional economic development plan to be integrated into the regional plans that affect the agencies is very critical. And I don't think that can be done by any of the agencies individually. So that, I think, needs to be a very major focus of the dialogue and what we do going forward. Whether we can really do 20 years, I'm not so sure. But a long-range view is very important.
Mackenzie?
Excuse me. Didn't have the pleasure to serve with you, Senator, and I do hear your... comments about your length of service and having been around through these various events. I just wanted to say, as an individual member of the JPC representing Sonoma County and the nine cities, that I appreciate your being here this morning. I appreciate your offer and would look forward to being involved in the dialogue. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I agree.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did actually, Jim Sparing really touched on a lot that I wanted to talk about, and that is the building, and the building is in the legislation, so I do think it's germane that we speak. Mark, it's, as you know, I was totally against moving to San Francisco. And I'm really not quite sure procedurally where we go, because as I've heard it, and I don't know if this is true, but the only one that can really take an action on MTC and force them to now sell the building is the Attorney General. That's what I've heard. It may be wrong. I don't know. Okay, I'm not an attorney, so I'll save that for other people in the room if they do. But I think for people like Mark Green and myself and a couple others who were against the building, I think we always knew, all of us always knew, that having all of us in the same building had value. And if you look at 1149, you see that. I mean, you see that that's exactly what you want us to do. Where I come from this now, and I've said this in ABAG meetings, is, you know, we put up a good fight, we gave the fight, we lost the fight. And sometimes in government, and, you know, I had some guy chew me out last night after our votes, you know, 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and he had nothing better to do. I guess he felt he wanted to jump on somebody. And my encouragement to him was, go ahead and run for elected office if you don't like what we did today. And to me it seems like we did everything we could to stay here in Oakland. And in the long run, we lost it. And in my opinion, we really should be allowed to be able to dust ourselves off and move forward. What am I saying? Personally, I'm saying that my personal ego about the building being in Oakland is overridden by the fact that I think all four of the agencies need to be together. And so I guess what I'm saying is I wish you would allow us to move forward and try to work and continue to have these meetings. But if you look at 1149, a lot of the stuff that we're trying to get to after we get everybody on one building is here. So maybe if, and I'm an East Bay guy. I mean, the people that go over the bridge are paying for that building. Maybe we could get an extra project out of Steve for it, but, you know, I mean, maybe we could get another Caldecott tunnel or something. Who knows, you know, something. But I think we should be allowed, and I wish this whole cloud of the Ledge Council and everything could just calm down and allow ABAG to have a serious discussion on, do they really want to go in or not? And I would hope that they would, and I would vote that they do. But I guess that's my wish, is that we allow to just move forward as four agencies, put it together, see how it looks, and then start doing some of the things you're asking us to do.
Cortese?
Can I?
Oh, sure. You want to?
Always like the opportunity to engage a conversation with Mr. Haggerty. That's an inside joke from a meeting in this room many years ago. On the building, and we had this discussion with Randy in my office, Scott, your calendar is your calendar. Legislative calendar is different. I'm the chair of the Senate Transportation Committee. I think I'm the last person from Northern California who chaired the Assembly Committee. People in the legislature generally look at me as the Bay Area's person on transportation. The building relates to transportation and tolls. I was involved in that both here and with the author of the enabling legislation and the leader of the Senate House at that time. I think people would criticize me for not doing what I think is the right thing to do. Under our calendar, what the bill that just got out of off the Senate floor, 30-2, is just a bill that says, please stop until the auditor gets done. The auditor, according to the state auditor, with her audit, is supposed to be done by the 1st of June. In the meeting I had with you and Randy, I said, I'd like to find out what the auditor says. So as far as the building goes, I agree with you. I mean, the irony of this, as we've talked about, is I agree with the sentiments of getting the four. I'd like to get all five district or regional agencies in one building. I think there's a lot to be said for that. Having said that, as I said to Jim in his comments, is I feel very strongly about the spirit of legislation, and, you know, we just have a difference of, maybe we don't have a difference of opinion as to that, but as to the timing of when it's done, I would think a big determination for me will be when the auditor comes back.
Cortese?
Thank you. Let me, too, thank the Senator for being here, engaging in dialogue. I'll be brief or concise. I find myself, you know, in different postures on different initiatives that you're currently pushing, or in at least one case holding in abeyance here, it sounds like. And I don't know what that says about who I am in terms of where I fall on these issues, but I know we served, at least in this room, in the early days of this process. In fact, the 7-on-7 discussions or dialogue that was very tense back in Gene Leong's day about, you know, merger and so forth, really, as you noted earlier, alluded to, led to this. And just an observation I wanted to share is that although mechanically we set up things like the JPC mechanisms, interestingly, from my perspective, and I think that you would see this, you know, day in and day out if you were here like you were then, there's been a natural evolution that's almost superseded that those mechanical efforts to try to piece things together. So mechanically, we, you know, through Torkson's legislation, et cetera, you know, brought more people into this group and so forth. But, you know, separate and apart from all that, the agencies, and I can particularly speak to MTC and ABAG, have really integrated planning efforts, I mean, in a very real way. There are people who are working together side by side and enjoying it that never did that before. You could literally see that last night. Two planning folks, I won't get into names and all that, but sitting side by side, co-presenting in a way that, you know, made you feel like they'd together been immersed in the planning process. And I think back, if you roll back the clock to those, I mean, that just didn't happen. It wasn't going on. So what point do I have here? My point is given what you just said about your role in the legislature with respect to transportation and other issues that we deal with here, and the insight that you have available to you going back to those early days of trying to make some of this, trying to seed some of this planning integration work, my hope would be that, you know, with this forbearance that you're talking about with at least that bill, that we can start figuring out ways for you to help us facilitate the natural direction that things are trying to go. I think the building, from your perspective, may be not such a natural, one of those more contrived mechanisms, but for a lot of people around here, it's viewed as a natural. I didn't vote for the original acquisition, but I do understand for a lot of folks here, it just seemed like the natural thing to do. I think somebody characterized it that way, Commissioner Sparing. So somehow we can get the natural energy that's already moving in the direction of much greater cooperation between these agencies, onto your day-to-day agenda, so that the legislative toolbox can be used to speed that along a little bit more, while some of us are still here to see it happen. That would be a great thing, just a great thing. And I don't know how to make that happen. I'm all for, you know, I don't need to sign up for one more duty, but any more than anyone else around the table. But if there's something I can do to help facilitate that, to keep the dialogue going, great. But that's a little esoteric, but that's basically what I see that needs to happen next. Somehow getting out of, you know, the tiger jumped out of the zoo, so how are we going to trap it? And rather, you know, how are we going to work with the general direction of where things go next? That's my two cents. Again, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Amar?
Senator, I just wanted to thank you for withdrawing. It sounds like you're withdrawing the legislation or allowing it to die in committee, but I really appreciate that. I look forward with my colleagues from San Francisco for a better dialogue on how we make the regional bodies work better together. I did want to say that San Francisco is not such a bad place, and that I hope that you look at respecting the process that we all went through to select a great site that we could increase cooperation between the agencies. But thank you again for withdrawing the legislation.
I am a former resident of San Francisco.
Mark, please.
Senator, thank you for your interest in this. And I just, somewhat of a newcomer, I don't think I have the history with JPC in the past, but now as chairman of ABAG, I'm part of the JPC Executive Committee, which this JPC formed, to provide some of the coordination that we see is needed in terms of early identification of issues that we can anticipate from each other before they become bigger issues down the road. And in that spirit, I just wanted to say what I've observed is this collaboration of diverse interests, large cities, small cities, unincorporated areas, incorporated areas, bay conservation, air, transportation, land use. And all those are really specialties and have a unique nature to them. And yet I think we all understand that we need to make, especially with this Sustainable Communities Plan, we need to make that all work together so that all the questions are answered before we're done. And so, and I just see that as Supervisor Gattesi pointed out, as just sort of a natural understanding that people are working towards, and I think we're kind of figuring it out. I think last night was a good example of having figured a lot of that out. There's still things to be done, but I think your objectives are right where we're at, is we're trying to make this work so that our Sustainable Communities Plan is, in fact, a sustainable plan and will be achieved. And so I think we're all on the same page in that sense, and I think we're just all trying to get there. And from my perspective, I think we've made a lot of progress.
So does anyone else wish to make a comment? Yes, sir. Worth? Amy Worth?
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. First of all, Mark, I want to thank you very much for being here. It takes a lot of courage to come here today and meet with us. And as you know, this has not been an easy month for any. It's not been an easy 6 months. You and I have worked together for 20 years with Julie together in a lot of Contra Costa things and regionally. And I appreciate your comments that, first of all, I appreciate the fact that you understand that how important your action on this bill is. As you know, the other night at the CCTA, we voted to oppose and request that the bill be withdrawn. And I think in that sentiment, there was a feeling of course we want to talk about these issues with Mark, because our county, that's the way we operate in terms of coming together. So the board made the distinction to talk to you first before sending a letter, and that was the idea, to request that. So I appreciate the fact that you are going to withdraw the bill. And I think it'll be important for us to be able to communicate that to our colleagues in Contra Costa. I also appreciate your understanding that each region is unique, and that, you know, your insights comparing Portland and the Bay Area. Government is organic, and we're different from L.A., we're different from San Francisco, you know, from Sacramento, all these areas. So I think that's important. And I also agree with the principles you've identified here. I think they are the principles really as to why we're doing what we're doing. But I think moving forward, and I think you coming here as the first step, is we have to be able to do business differently. I think we've all been really troubled by the activities in the last month, particularly with this bill, and I think that your comments about mutual trust and mutual respect, I completely agree with, and I think it's got to be mutual coming together. I also feel that it's important as we address this, and you're hearing today how people are really willing to meet together, that it be a bottoms up, side to side, face to face discussion as opposed to top down. And I think with that philosophy, we can address a lot of the issues that you're focused on and concerned about. I think we have to deal with the building, and we have to deal with it openly and have a discussion, because if we're going to move forward, both the building and the plan. The other thing I think that is you know, mindful of what's working. You look at our transportation investment and network. 65% of the money that's invested in our region is locally, and that's all bottom up work. So I think that we have models that really work well. I think there are definitely things we can do better. The work of the JPC, but I would much rather be working side by side than in opposition. And I think that everybody is putting in a tremendous amount of work. You are in Sacramento. We have the opportunity to really have a good working relationship with the chairman of the Senate Transportation Committee. This is huge. We got to compete with LA. We got huge challenges for the Bay Area. So, again, I want to thank you for coming today. I know you know how strongly we feel about this, and I'm very glad that we can go back to our colleagues in the county and say we're working together, and that you have made that first step. So thank you.
Okay, I think it's unanimous. We're all happy you came, Mark.
We haven't heard from staff.
I just wanted to summarize, if I may, and then I'll turn back to you. First of all, I think that anybody who's observed what's happened to the JPC over the last 3 years or so, it sees that it is evolving and emerging. And a lot of progress has actually been made with this organization, frankly. A lot of it has to do with the fact that the executive directors have actually been meeting together over a long period of time and are coordinating with them with their work plans and working together very closely. That hasn't happened in the past, and there hasn't been a kind of trust between the agencies. So that's been a very positive thing. We're also fortunate to have good staff here, and I think the JPC has taken on some roles that we're going to discuss later in our agenda that are they're going to be worthwhile and are going to be helpful. One of the big problems I see in the region is the lack of really having a coherent economic plan and a plan that looks at which is one of the principles that you put forward, so I'm glad to see that. So I think that there is real progress, and the formation of the executive committee is also, we had a really good meeting of the executive committee, and I think that this is a proper place for this to be discussed, this issue with Mark. And so what I'd like to suggest is that we refer this to the executive commission for discussion. And, of course, the executive committee does not empower to make votes and will have an opportunity to actually decide this issue. But at least it's a little bit smaller group, and it gives us a forum. And then I think in that forum, we need to bring in some other people. I mean, you know, a lot of people said this is not going to be top-down. What is everybody around this room? We're all toppers, you know what I mean? So the people who are not here have to be part of this discussion and this debate. And for me, principally, those people are the business community. The business community needs to be here. If the business community really wants to see us make some changes and wants to see us streamline and make it more efficient, then they need to be at the table. And we need to hear their concerns, and we need to understand those concerns so that we can start molding. And then the other thing, I think that unfortunately, I agree with a lot of the comments about the building. I was hoping, didn't want to get into it, but I totally think that it's so important for us to come together and have a situation where that we're all in the same place. The Hope Bank will join with us, and I hope that, because that communication, that opportunity to talk to one another, have table talk, you know, and have coffee over coffee just to be able to learn from each other and build. Plus, the planning can be really integrated. So a lot of steps are happening. And the trick is going to be, if we're going to have any kind of legislation, is how do we take what's evolving, and as a lot of people have said, and take that and make that maybe a little improve upon that, but not necessarily, you know, throw it out, the baby out with the bathwater. So I'm looking forward to it. Unless I hear it differently, what I'm going to do then is request that this goes to our executive committee. I'll ask, actually, in our next meeting, we'll agendize it, and we'll have a discussion of that opportunity. And then I think as things evolve from the executive committee, we will bring it back to this committee. We're not going to have a star chamber kind of thing. We'll bring it back to everybody. And if people feel like this is not the appropriate thing to do, then they need to speak about that.
Be happy to.
We were doing so well.
Sure. Well, he doesn't anything I'm for, he's against. So it's a,
huh? What?
No, go ahead. You're recognized.
Oh, thank you. I really don't support what you're saying, and I look around this table and I see a lot of people that have been chairs of past agencies that maybe have at times even chaired three or four of them, and but due to the fact that some of us, and I'll put myself in this category. Have been around a long time, and we've done hard work. We've kind of worked our way through the chairs. And I'll be personal about it. In my case, I've worked my way through all the chairs of the regional agencies that are possible. So, but having said that, there's other people that have done the very same thing. And I don't think you should exclude the wisdom of those of us that have been around a while. And I think that if really this is going to be something that's going to move forward and have a meaningful discussion, I would appreciate if you would allow the senator to pick who's going to be at the table for his bill.
I won't pick him.
And it's okay. I'll text you regularly.
But I appreciate this hierarchy that's trying to be made here. And I think that really what you should do is keep your powder dry today and just kind of settle down and put it on the agenda and let us have a discussion as to where we're going to go, as opposed to telling us you're just going to move it. And I really mean what I'm saying in relationship to the fact that I think the senator should pick who he's going to work with.
Well, let me just say, what's going to happen is I'm going to refer the issue to the executive committee. I'm not going to make this decision. The executive committee can then debate this again and make a decision how they want to proceed. They may say we'll do it here, or they may say we should form a committee. We should work it with the senator, come up with a committee that he's comfortable with. Those suggestions will all be hashed out. We're not going to do it here this morning. Green.
In response to that, I'm not quite sure why you can't put it on the agenda so we can have a meaningful discussion.
I'm going to go to the executive committee between now and our next meeting. The executive committee will decide.
What's the purpose of that?
I just told you. So
wait a minute. I'm trying to be respectful, so I don't understand the railroad conductor attitude you have right now. So what I'm trying to do is I'm saying probably the best way to handle this. I mean, this is the problem. What you need is you need consensus to move things forward. And you can't do things in a vacuum. And I think all I'm merely recommending is that you put it on the agenda for us to talk about. And maybe they will delegate the authority to this group of eight or whatever it is. But for you to just do it unilaterally right now, I think is really wrong.
Well, you think it's wrong for me to, let me just, I don't want to debate this anymore. You think it's wrong for me to refer to the executive committee to give recommendations back to the full body?
I do.
I don't think people share that. If you want to make a motion to that effect, you can do that. But, and I'm happy to agendize it to the next meeting if that makes you comfortable. I'd much rather have the executive committee have an opportunity to think about how they want to handle this and then make a recommendation to the body.
Why can't we?
And I'm not dictating what the heck the executive committee is going to do, Scott. So I'm going to call Mr. Green. I think our dialogue is...
A couple of things, Tom. First of all, I do think you're right about having business at the table. And I see that we have something about that later on, which I think it's a nice step forward, but not really where it needs to go. On this item, somewhat in agreement with Scott, but not entirely. But I do think that you having the ability to refer back to the executive committee makes some sense. But my problem is this, because I'm absolutely sure that of all, not excluding even including the Senate, I'll say this, that the people sitting around this table. My belief on this bill is much more radical than anybody else's. I mean, in terms of what I would like to see done out of this. So my concern about what you want to do is that it's going to be very neutered, very watered down, just a tepid, almost a token step forward. We'll do this, and we've collaborated, and Yahoo. Personally, I would like to... be given an opportunity at some point to inject what I really think needs to have happen on here, which again is much different, I'm sure, than everybody else around this table. So my concern with what you wanted to do, Tom, is that it's going to be very sedate. I'll put it that way.
You guys should understand the executive committee is a Brown Act committee, so it'll be noticed. You're more than welcome to attend. You're more than welcome to participate. So it's not like it's an exclusive club. Okay, unless there's a motion otherwise, I'm going to say that we're going to refer this to the executive committee, and we will put it on our agenda either the next meeting or at the direction of the executive committee. If they decide it's not ripe, we'll put it on the next one. I mean, it's coming back to this committee for sure. Okay. So, Mr. Haggerty, you wish to make closing comments? Your lights on.
No, I'm just waiting to go after you again. I mean, I just really cannot believe the way you're doing this. The problem that we have had... And I'm willing to let it go forward. All of us just sat here, and we talked about the bill, that 1149, that was before us. And we talked about the process, and we talked about how we wanted to be involved. And now you're excluding people sitting around this table that want to be involved. I think the direction you're going is already a disaster. It is already a disaster. And I think what you should do is, in fact, I'll make the motion that nothing be done until you bring it back to this committee under an agenda in which we can talk about how we're going to proceed. Okay. That's my motion.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay. I think we know the issue. I don't really think we need to debate it. Can you, Bruce, can you call the roll? Got to find the roll sheet. Huh? Well, why don't we have a show of hands? How many people are in favor of the motion? Please raise your hand. Okay. Opposed? Raise your hand. Okay, so it fails. Okay, thank you. So, Mark, you want to make an ending comment? Don't incite the
I didn't do anything.
Mr. Chairman, just after that.
So you come testify next Wednesday? I didn't want to get involved in that. I didn't think it was appropriate. But, you know, differences of opinion are part of, I think, all of us, our experience. Just a couple things. One thing, and I hate to go back to the building, but Supervisor Haggerty, as I understand it, as ledge counsel, and I think I understand it pretty well, there's different ways it could stop. A court would have to decide, or the legislature, with the governor's signature by statute, could direct you to sell the building, or if there is a civil suit, that could happen as well. So it's you could ask the AG for opinion. I'm not an attorney, but I don't think the two ways the building could be stopped is by statute or by an action in a civil proceeding. And having said that, when this body started, it came about from legislation that was very controversial, and it sort of shook us all, and it came to this. I don't believe that that's necessary, but I did learn something from that experience. So, be honest, that's part of the reason why the legislation came out this way. I really appreciate all the comments. The last few months have strained both professional and personal relationships, and Amy, you and I have been good friends, and it's been hard for us to talk to one another, so I hope this is redemption on that account, on a personal level as well. What I hope maybe this comes out of this is a discussion and a structure, and maybe the Bay Area, and I really believe we're all in this category, we're really fortunate to be elected officials, to my view, the most beautiful, innovative place on earth. So, in my mind's eye, there's no finished product that I envision. It's a collective. And maybe what would come out of this is we become the leader in looking at sort of best practices of how to deal with regional needs in a metropolitan area that struggles with geographic boundaries and political boundaries. So I view what happened as one of the beautiful necessities of democracy, and I hope that's what we'll learn in the next 6 months.
Mark, excuse me.
Yeah.
This is an agendized item. There's some people who wish to speak, and the public wish to speak to this item. Now's the time to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Scott Peterson with the Economic Development Alliance of the East Bay. It's been an enlightening discussion, and thank you, Senator, for being here today. We've been in conversation with Senator DeSaulnier over the past year. He had a bill last year that was similar. And we've had conversations throughout the past year about how this body can become more effective and take a more proactive role in coordinating the activities of the regional agencies and with the Bay Area Business Coalition. We're now meeting with your staff and the executive directors on a quarterly basis to inform that conversation, also to share the information from the business community that Mayor Bates and Mayor Green referenced earlier. All of this, you know, I think will help contribute to your understanding, to public involvement, and to really helping make the JPC become a much more effective, cohesive, well-informed body that can help guide the regional planning discussions. I do want to say that even though we have not taken any position as the Bay Area Business Coalition or as the East Bay EDA on the senator's bill, we do want to thank him for really forcing this conversation. I know it's obviously not the easiest conversation to have for many people, but I think the what I've witnessed here today and what I've heard in terms of the level of respect, the acknowledgement of the tension that this creates in having this conversation is actually a good thing. And I think that will help move the ball forward. Final point, with respect to economic development planning, we've mentioned before our concerns about regulatory agencies being involved in that kind of activity. That's something that you all need to look at very carefully. It may be an effective role for the JPC. It's something that we will continue to offer our input on as this conversation moves forward. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay, seeing none. I think, Joy, did you want to, John?
Just briefly, I think every time we reflect on sort of where we are and where what changes may need to occur to make us more effective as regional government, I always think back to the formation of BCDC, where there was a lot of tension at that time in the 60s on the formation of an agency that ultimately was responsible for saving the Bay, that cities and counties at first were not supportive of, but the community came together and actually demanded that change. So I think, you know, there are times in our history when it's worth looking at and revisiting whether our structure, and I agree with Mark Green, actually. I probably fall in the category that more radical restructuring makes more sense than tepid restructuring, and I'm not sure what that means ultimately in the end. But I think the kind of principles that are laid out on the sheet of paper the senator handed out are the kinds of things we all agree with, and it may mean we may disagree on the details of how to get there.
So I want to remind everybody we have a full agenda. Yes, Councilor. Yeah.
Thank you.
Commissioner Ward?
Yeah, I appreciate this discussion, and I look forward to working moving forward. I think there are a couple of things. You know, I tend to view organic governmental evolution as an organic process, and I think it works the best if it is. But I also am concerned, as this discussion, with still the elephant in the room, and we're going to leave this meeting, and what I'm still worried about is this fight with regards to differing views about the building, for example. And I agree that the assessment that the state could do something, the region can, you know, where we are right now. And I'm concerned because I think that the collateral damage that's happened, especially in the last month, has been staggering on elected officials, also on the staffs of these agencies that have had to endure the agony and the fear about, you know, what does the future hold. And I really would like us to come out of today some kind of discussion about how we're going to proceed along the differences that we have about this building. I understand that, but I'm not clear in my mind as to how, if we have a pathway moving forward so that we can work together with you on this major issue, which I think is where we're kind of struggling, because I think that there's agreement about the principles, about the regional stuff, but we still have this huge thing that's facing us, and I'm trying to figure out how we're going to move forward. Well, so I'd just like to get your sense as in terms of understanding.
maybe we can schedule another meeting, and that can be in the agenda. By that time, the state auditor will be done with their audit, and we can all have an open, honest discussion about the building.
Jane?
Thank you. I have comments on three issues. I want to start with Tom, about your comment about business, which I think should be at the table and is critical. But on the flip side, having just finished negotiating the community benefits with the contractors and developers of the Army base, there are nonprofit organizations that also need to be at the table, and I think we need to invite both. And so I want to put that out. On the committee, someone echoed that they thought it would. I'm in a great supporter and have been for years for much more regional planning. And so I am somewhat concerned that the committee has people who have different viewpoints on it, so that it doesn't come down to that it's a watered-down plan, but we have the controversy on that, and I don't care how the committee's developed, but that we have that controversy in the committee that's developing the regional plan. And lastly, I can't sit here from Oakland and not comment about the building. Oakland really wants everyone to stay here, so I felt like I had to say that.
Thank you very much. Okay, thank you for the dialogue. We're going to have to kind of step on it now. We'd like to go back to the regular order of the agenda. So we're going to go for the approval of the minutes, but I think Travis has a comment that we need to make a correction on the minutes.
In approving the minutes, I would like you to help us out in some staff work. We offered you at the last meeting some alternatives for management of the JPC. There were three of them. Have more frequent meetings, restructure the JPC membership or establish an executive committee. And in the staff report, it said it's made up of either the chairs or the chairs and the vice chairs. And you chose that middle course and never decided which one it is. So what we would like you to do as you adopt the minutes, we make it very clear that you establish an executive committee that's made up of the chairs and the vice chairs, or in the case of ABAG, the president and the vice president, and the chair of the JPC. And in making that clear in the minutes, that will ratify what we think you intended to do.
Can I have a motion to that effect?
I'll move the minutes with that clarification.
Jim, second. Okay. Is there an objection to all being voted aye? Okay, seeing none, we'll all be voted aye. Okay, then the next item deals with the...
We voted
unanimously. Oh, you voted no. I'm sorry. You were two. I'm sorry. Okay, then the next issue is the briefing on the rising tides, and this is... So, the ARC person, is that here?
I'm right here.
Good. Are you ready?
I'm ready. I'm going to try and shorten this, so I might speed through some slides. Good morning, committee members. I am here to provide an overview of the Adapting to Rising Tides project, which is a project that is a collaborative effort being led by the Bay Conservation and Development Commission to help the region better understand how sea level rise and storm events will affect the future of our shoreline and how we can better address these challenges. The goal of the project is to increase preparedness and resilience in Bay Area communities while protecting ecosystem and community services. After considering proposals from throughout the region, the project management team selected a portion of Alameda County between Emeryville and Union City for the project area. The ARC project is designed to address two broad questions: how sea level rise and storm events affect the future of Bay Area communities, infrastructure, ecosystem, and economy, and what approaches can we pursue both locally and regionally to assess these challenges and reduce or manage these risks. The project is loosely using a four-step planning process developed by ICLEI Local Governments for Sustainability. This process includes project scoping and organization, assessing impacts, vulnerabilities, and risks, developing a plan, and implementing and monitoring adaptation strategies. The data, information, methods, tools, and lessons learned from the project, we hope will make it easier for other agencies and organizations to pursue this kind of work, either on their own or within collaborative efforts like the ARC project. BCDC is leading the project with strong financial support and involvement from a number of partners: the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's Coastal Services Center, the Federal Highway Administration, ICLEI, and the Metropolitan Transportation Commission have all provided funding and staff assistance to the project. In order to conduct the work of the Adapting to Rising Tides project, we convened a working group of representatives from public agencies and private interests with investments along the shoreline, and you can see a list of most of them here. The working group, which consists of local, county, regional, state, and federal partners, is providing advice and feedback at key points in the project. The working group meets every 2 months at locations throughout the subregion, being hosted at partners' offices. There are two subcommittees that we've created of working group members, and they provide information on advice on technical information and help develop a communication strategy for the project. The project includes an analysis of 12 key asset categories within the project area, and that's airport, community land use, facilities and services, contaminated lands, energy pipelines and telecom, hazardous material sites, ground transportation, parks and recreation, natural shorelines, seaports, stormwater, structural shorelines, and wastewater. We're looking at them not only as individual asset categories, but how the vulnerabilities relate to one another. The project team has completed the impacts assessment portion of the project, and that has included the climate impact statement, an asset inventory, asset-specific metrics, and an existing conditions and stressors report. In addition to the impacts assessment, other related work is going on as part of the project. In partnership with MTC and Caltrans, a vulnerability assessment of ground transportation infrastructure was completed earlier this year. The Pacific Institute completed a social vulnerability and demographic analysis for the project, and ERG developed an economic analysis for the loss of park and recreation resources within the subregion. BCDC staff is working on white papers evaluating the relationship between equity issues and climate change impacts and governance issues related to climate change vulnerabilities and adaptation. We're now moving into the assessment phase of the project, which will evaluate the projected impacts, a determination of the vulnerabilities, and an identification of the risks associated. We are identifying projected impacts by using six future climate scenarios based on two sea level rise projections, 16 inches and 55 inches. Based on the local climate projections selected, working group members helped the project team define the scope of the projected impacts that the project would address. The five climate impacts associated with changes in storm events and sea level rise that were identified with the working group and subcommittees are more frequent floods, floods that last longer, can you advance? Floods that last longer, frequent or permanent inundation in new areas, overtopping of shoreline protection and erosion, and elevated groundwater and salinity intrusion. New maps to help determine potential exposure have been developed by a coastal engineering consultant. These maps are being used to conduct the vulnerability and risk assessment. The new maps depict areas that may be potentially subjected to high tide inundation or storm event flooding with 16 or 55 inches of sea level rise. The maps are based on a refined analysis of the shoreline that takes into account existing shoreline protection and the potential for wind-driven waves. To identify possible vulnerability and risk, the ART team is conducting an assessment that is both a desktop analysis and a survey of experts to gain their best professional judgment. Key sensitivity, adaptive capacity, and consequences questions are being asked by both methods. These key questions include, if exposed to a climate impact, would the asset, for instance, the airport, be physically or functionally impaired? If compromised, could it maintain function? Could it quickly, easily, or in a low-cost manner be restored to function? Or is there an ability to quickly, easily, or in a low-cost manner improve its capacity to cope with an exposure to climate change? For instance, you could put sandbags out maybe for the first 10 years. Quick, low-cost method.
Yes,
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Sure. Are you almost through? I may ask this question. How many more?
Oh, okay. If she's almost through, I can wait.
Yeah, I think she's almost through.
The assessment also asks key risk questions. If exposed to a climate impact, what is the expected magnitude of the consequences on economy, environment, government, society, and equity? And then I am going to skip through our findings so far on the that we have had through the vulnerability assessment because I realize you guys are short on time. So if you could just advance the slides, I will let you know. Okay, next steps. There we go. So the next steps in the project are to complete the vulnerability and risk assessment, which we are currently in the throes of. We are going to have our next ART project working group meeting on June 5th, where we present the key findings. The report will be released in draft form that day or that week. We've been working very closely with the asset category managers, for instance, the Seaport, the Port of Oakland for Seaport and airport issues. So they've reviewed our analysis and provided us with feedback, and that's been going on for all of the asset categories. But the fully compiled report will be released the week of June 5th. We are going to be developing adaptation strategies, options, and an evaluation framework in the summer of this summer, and we're going to be engaging partners and identifying adaptation strategies and options starting in the fall. Right now, we're working pretty closely and exclusively with our working group members. We do have a project website where a lot of the information can be found. but we're not doing a large outreach campaign until we have the findings within our working group. And then the next slide. And you can find more information at our website. Again, the FHWA report, meeting dates, fact sheets, lots of information is available at our website.
Thank you.
If you have any questions, I'm available to answer them now, and then I'm also available at any time.
So I'm sorry we had to rush through that, but Jim, do you have a question?
Yeah, just real quick. You know, the one slide you're showing when you talk about sandbags, and I mean that really is not what we're hearing from, you know, even the experts that support sea level rise. They say it's going to happen incrementally. It's going to happen over a period of time. And so if we see that the water level goes up X number of inches in so many years, they're going to be able to project that. And it's like what man has done on his planet forever. We've adapted to it. And so I think it's the way it's portrayed, I don't think is a accurate portrayal. I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow, and we have to get these sandbags out. And so I would much rather see the presentation made that this is a long-range strategy that we've got to start preparing for today.
Could I respond, Travis?
Sure.
I saw Travis reach for the mic. The issue is not just sea level rise, but also the storm events. And so if I had some of the maps that we have in preparation for our next meeting, I could demonstrate how sea level rise, as it rises, the storm events then impact further inland. And so that's where you have the sandbags issue. And it's not going to happen tomorrow. And one of the things that we're finding overall in our vulnerability assessment across all of the asset categories that we're evaluating is that at 16 inches of sea level rise, as long as our existing shoreline protection holds up, we don't have much of a problem. And the storms that will be projected that will be bigger because of the sea level rise will be able to be addressed in many cases with sandbags or maintenance and operations issues. The issue is not tomorrow. It's 20, 30, 40 years from tomorrow. But that doesn't mean that we have time to plan, but that doesn't mean that we have time to wait to plan. And so I didn't mean to imply that we need sandbags for sea level rise, because right. I meant to imply that we need sandbags for the storm events in addition to sea level rise. And I did not mean to imply that that will happen in 10 years. That will happen much further out. But it's time that we address and find the sort of weak points or the places in which we need to identify our vulnerabilities, at least within the ART project subregion, so that we can become more resilient.
This is a criticism. I just think that we don't present it in a way that this is a long-term strategy, this is going to happen, and these are some of the events that will take place in that strategy. It seems like, you know, it's this kind of alarmist approach in the beginning, and I just wish that we would change that strategy. I think we're going to get a lot more public support if we do that, if they understand. And you don't need to respond. I mean, I heard the presentation. So I just think that we need to be a little more sensitive to that if we're going to get public support. We've got to make sure they clearly understand the long-term implications of what's happening.
Mark Green?
A couple of questions and then three, but I'll get them all at the same time. The list of people that you said you've been talking to, you said the East Bay Discharges Authority. And I believe that Alameda County Water District and the Union Sanitary District may be part of that group. Is that correct? Because I saw some other people listed separately. I want to make sure that they've been involved since it does go to Union City.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. The Bay Trail, you've been talking, I hope, to some people involved with that.
Yes.
And finally, since you just mentioned that at 16 inches, we may not really need to be doing much. And then you'd skip to 55 inches. And I'm thinking that gradient is so huge in terms of, you know, one's 3.5 times what the other one is. Is that, wouldn't it be better that we looked at something between 16 and 55? I mean, like a 30 or 32 or something like that, since you almost admitted that at 16, very little needs to be done at this point.
I mean, I don't want to imply that nothing needs to be done at 16 inches. I think what we're finding, at least in our ART project subregion, is that the things that need to be done are not, it's not widespread across the shoreline. There are certain portions of shoreline protection or certain areas that are not protected that need to be further evaluated. And in the vulnerability assessment, we will call those out. And then your question was whether or not we should evaluate something in the middle. And there will be in the future, hopefully soon, a sea level rise viewer that will have a varied, you can choose your number. It will be more gradient than 55 and 16. We had to use 55 and 16 because of the data that we were building the maps from. And so we didn't have the capacity to go back and do 32, for instance.
Zach?
Couple quick comments. One, my first comment is, I'm a little sorry, but I understand this discussion is not quite as exciting as the previous one. But it is every bit as important. I don't disagree with Jim's basic thrust. We need a very major focused educational campaign that is long term, and we need to think about it. I'm not saying this is the wrong approach. I think indeed this is the correct approach, but we do need to refine it and improve it and expand it. This is also the kind of, one, tackling critical problems, two, tackling them in a cooperative way amongst agencies. The list of partners is impressive. It's the kind of thing we need. It's the kind of thing that is happening now. I'm not so sure it happened enough in the past, but it is happening now. We need to increase it. We need to communicate it. And I want to thank the BCDC staff for leading this effort. This project is going to become, I believe, it's becoming the poster child for the kind of actions we need to take, because this is not simply a study that's going to sit on the shelf. This is going to develop an action plan that will help preserve our built environment from something that we know is coming, whose real damages will occur probably long after many of us sitting around this table are here, or at least active in the way we are now. But if we don't take these kinds of actions now, it will be disastrous.
Eric Marr.
Ms. Lowe, I wanted to thank you for the presentation. I know that we've recently had a number of projects that are impacted, and that this could be extremely beneficial, but I wish we could have had data kind of before the projects like Treasure Island, the Candlestick Point, Hunter's Point, Shipyard project, and even a recent one where BCDC was very helpful with a waterfront development. That was a long, long meeting on Tuesday night. But I'm just wondering how this translates. How would it help San Francisco, where there's fears of the big one coming within the next 20 years, plus sea level rise, and we're trying to assess kind of how the bay is impacted. But how would it help us kind of in our land use decisions? I chair our land use committee as well. But that's just a quick question, because we have wild estimates of how much sea level will rise that are much higher than what BCDC estimates, and how will this project help us get better data on that?
Well, I think what we're hoping for in the project is that it provides a model for cities, counties, to use to develop their own process for determining their vulnerabilities and then finding a way to adapt to those vulnerabilities. But this project, except for the fact that you could look at how we developed our maps and the data that we used to develop our maps, we did a very project-specific, locationally specific, from Union City to Emeryville analysis of that shoreline. And so we didn't do it for the city and county of San Francisco. So it would not necessarily help you to identify your vulnerabilities in San Francisco. And then in terms of the sea level rise impacts that numbers that we selected, 16 and 55 inches, those are projections that have been consistent across the state in terms of what we've been using. Those may change And I think people just need to pay attention to when those change.
Okay, thank you. Steve?
Yeah, if I could just add a quick comment to that, and it goes back to the earlier comment as well. What we really see is that, which we had the curve of sea level rise, as you go out from now to mid-century, sea level rise goes up fairly slowly, and we can deal with it, as Lindy said, with existing measures. But then it accelerates and takes off and goes up very steeply. So, and it's uncertain how much that will accelerate at that time. So we really actually need two different sea level rise planning processes, one out to the mid-century, and then thinking about when it really takes off at the end. So those higher numbers you're hearing about are the later ones when it really takes off. We don't need to worry about that for the next 10, 20 years, but we need to plan for it now, as Lindy said. So I hope that helps.
And that is part of the project. We're looking at both 16 inches and 55 inches, and we're developing strategies for both and the timing for both. And we also think it's very important to start monitoring and determining when things start to happen and working with the flood control managers around the counties to develop a monitoring plan so that they say, uh-oh, things are starting to happen that we hadn't seen, and so then you can start moving to the next phase of your adaptation plan.
Thank you. Okay, well, this is obviously something we'll keep an eye on, and we'll have other, hopefully other updates. So I'd like to reorder the agenda and go to item number 5, which is an action item. I'm worried about a quorum. I know people are busy with last night. They're up late last night. And then we do have, I'm really anxious to hear Sean Randolph's economic development information, so I hope people can stay. So why don't I turn over to Travis, who'll lead us through this one.
All right, Bruce. I will be very, very brief. To follow through on the directions you gave us at your last meeting, we continued our work that's aimed at improving your capabilities for achieving your objectives. We've initiated some new activities. We've completed an analysis request that you requested. And all of that is described in greater detail in a March 11th report, which we provided to you. Let me tell you what we would like you to do, and if you're willing to do it, that's fine. And if not, then we'll go back and explain in greater detail why you should do it. What we would like you to do is to adopt the 6 criteria that are found at the top page 4 of our report, which you will use to select projects and initiatives on which JPC leadership will provide clear value added for a specific topic or issue. Second, we recommend that you support the conclusion there's no advantage to either merging the JPC and the ABAGS Regional Planning Committee or to significantly restructuring either committee. And third, we recommend that you endorse the idea of having quarterly meetings between the JPC executive directors and the Bay Area Business Coalition, and that continued direct interaction with the business community through the Bay Area Council's Economic Institute, and approve a refinement of the 6-step coordination and conflict resolution process that you've already adopted to assure early engagement with the business community, environmental interests, and the equity organizations. So that is what we would like you to do. If you need further information, I can go into it in greater detail. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any discussion on this item?
Yeah, Ken. The first two parts I'm not so concerned with, but the last one, again, as I said, getting back to what we talked about a little bit earlier, I see that the business coalition will be meeting with that little subgroup again, or with the executive directors. But again, as far as, I guess there's still a massive amount of resistance here, I guess, of actually allowing business people to sit at this table. And that's what I'm so perplexed by.
Okay, well, why don't I do this? Why don't I take that issue and take that also to the executive committee for further discussion, if that's okay. Does anyone in the public wish to address this issue? Okay. Seeing none, are people comfortable with moving ahead then? We need a motion in that case.
So moved.
Second, okay. Is there any more discussion on this issue? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I guess it passes unanimously. Okay, thank you. That was fast. You were right. So, Sean, we get to hear your presentation. I'm very pleased that you'll have sufficient time.
Well, thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. I'll go through this in 5 minutes or less.
But you can do a little longer.
Well, I can.
Give us all the information that we need to.
I'll be efficient.
Okay.
As you know, we've been at work at the Institute since the beginning of the year on the study that you requested on what's happening in the regional economy in terms of business creation, growth, job creation, and the policy issues that may raise for both the agencies, local governments, and business. We've had three people on the case, and we finished at the end of April putting together the initial set of data. And on May 7th and 8th, we had two meetings. A lot of people came personally, others phoned in, where we shared that information with everybody who expressed an interest to show up to hear it. So there were a ton of slides. It was about an hour and a half conversation, but I just brought a few to give you a sense for what we're looking at. So this first one, and again, these are just teasers, and I'm very happy to share with anybody who would like to see them the full deck of slides. You can see the level of depth we've been able to take this to so far. So looking at employment in the area, again, this is just representative. If you look at the top three categories, and in the vertical columns, you've got Bay Area. So that's the distribution within the Bay Area. And then we have different regions. And what this basically tells you is, at the far left column, that we have a disproportionately strong concentration of jobs in the region in professional, scientific, and technical services, a lot of technology there, healthcare, retail trade, and as well as accommodation and food services, that's essentially tourism. So that is a very strong element of the economy in the region. If you start to look at the different subregions, though, you can see how it starts to look different. So Santa Clara, you can see, oh, wow, really strong in professional and scientific services, and really, really strong in manufacturing. That manufacturing is pretty much all technology. You go over to North Bay, well, professional, scientific, technical services are a lot less significant. So we do have the numbers that will let us really look down county by county as well as regionally at where the jobs are and where we think they're going to come from in the future. This next slide gives you some sense for industries that are driving the economy, where we have unusually strong presence both nationally and regionally. So the left axis there, it's U.S., the right axis is California, and the farther up to the right-hand corner you are, it means the stronger we are. And you can see professional, scientific, technical services extremely strong, and information, which is a lot of other things related, especially to information technology, very strong too. So that kind of points you again to areas of concentration and strength, and as you saw from the last slide, we can look at how that gets distributed county by county throughout the region. So if we go to the next one, which is looking at this demographically, and just professional, scientific, and technical services, you can see an intense concentration in the San Francisco metropolitan district. This is San Francisco, Oakland, down toward Fremont, Santa Clara, obviously. The Bay Area as a whole, very strong concentration, including the East Bay, North Bay, less so. We go to the next one. This gives you a sense of the distribution of the size of companies we have here in the area. And you can see that there's an incredible number, percentage of establishments that are one or two people, or 25 or less. And then as you go up, they become very, very few by comparison. So there is really a very strong concentration here, I think more so even than most of the country, in quite small businesses. So if you go to the next one, this is, I think, pretty interesting, especially for people who are interested in economic development. It shows where jobs come from and how jobs go away. And the takeaway from this is this blue section, that so job creation, job destruction, overwhelmingly or very preponderantly, most jobs come from new companies being established. startups and young companies. Most jobs go away because those startups and young companies fail. And only a very, very small proportion of jobs actually come from companies moving in who are not already here in the Bay Area. And actually a pretty small proportion, a very small proportion, actually comes from companies leaving the Bay Area, whether by moving out or expanding elsewhere. So if there was a message in this, it's that we really shouldn't sweat quite as much as we sometimes do the issue of attracting companies from outside the Bay Area or even encourage them not to leave, although we want them to stay. We need to make it more attractive. But it's really about how do we enable young companies to get started and to grow and hire people and survive as being one of our big, big challenges ahead. Next one. This tells you just a little bit about mobility. This is taking San Mateo County as an example. And it says that there a lot of people move around, and they move around pretty much to adjacent counties. These are actually business moves. I take it back. These are business moves. But it's the same message, that businesses tend to move within the region. They tend not to go outside the region or come from outside the region anywhere as much as they tend to shift between counties within the Bay Area. Next one. This has to do with new business formation, a lot of numbers, but the basic message on this is this is the rate at which new businesses are formed. And in the Bay Area, we don't tend to create new businesses any more rapidly than anywhere else in California. We're pretty much the same as anywhere in the state. However, if you look at this and you broke out technology companies, you'd probably have a different looking set of numbers. But in terms of startups, survival rates, we look a lot like the rest of California. Next one. Looking at occupations, labor pool, we have, this concentration toward the upper right shows unusual strength. No big surprises there. Computers, technology, architecture, engineering, very strong. Business, financial operations, management, very strong. And then you can see the lower axis is wages, so you can see how this correlates with people's income. And then the quotient, the ratio of concentration is sort of the left axis. But you can see the industries that are driving us in terms of job percentages and the incomes that are tied to them. Next one. Almost down there. This just looks at jobs that relate to computers and mathematical skills. And you can see, well, Santa Clara County, Silicon Valley, no huge surprise, but immense concentration there. Huge concentration in the Bay Area, driven by Santa Clara County, but San Francisco and East Bay right up there, very strong as well. Next one. This just goes a little bit into commute patterns for people who I was just describing who have math and scientific skills. No big surprise, but it tends to be concentrated in the South Bay, Santa Clara County, San Mateo County, to a lesser degree up in San Francisco as well. And they're moving around between tech companies. Next. And this tells just a little bit about what we know about commuters, the number of people that move back and forth within the area. They actually tend to be people as they're going between. So there's sort of a dichotomy here. People who with higher education who are going to high-paying jobs. Also, there's an awful lot of construction workers that move around the area. Next. And we have information on commute patterns. This is just a little bit more elaboration on the earlier slides. But obviously, from a regional planning standpoint, looking at what those patterns are and who's moving around and for what reasons is important. Next. And this is just a bit more about the commute, who's moving between what cities within the region. Next. So those are the slides. very happy to share with anybody who really wants to look at them the complete set of slides that we've shared in our briefings. We'll send them out. We'll make sure that Bruce has them. Bruce came to the briefings, and so we'll get those circulated. But the you can see the level of detail we're going into, and the next stage we're still collecting data. We're asking everybody who wants to delve into this to help us focus on what's important, what are the issues that you want us to focus on as we kind of parse out all the information that we have. And now we're going in the second phase, which is interviews. So we have a lot of information. We've brought a team on staff, contractors, to help us conduct 75 interviews with businesses all around the region. With targets for distribution by county and by industry and by size so that it's representative. And then we'll do, once we have that data together and the feedback from that, we're going to correlate it with the numbers and then come back to you to start to engage you on how this relates to regulatory policy and other government policy. So we are on track to have all of that together by the end of June, early July. This should be wrapped up by mid to late July. We are, by the way, I should say we're engaging people in the labor community, the environmental community, the social equity community. They've been very active commenting on this. And we are looking to have this in place so that when MPC's HUD grant starts to ramp up in the end of July and into August, that this will be foundational work for that work. Happy to answer any questions.
Did you have a question? I'm sorry, John, did you have a question? I'm sorry, somebody had a...
No, I was actually just going to request.
Because I found that the chart that we hear so often from the business community, that the reason that, you know, there's folks leaving because of regulation, but and we all know while that may affect some, that clearly that's a really small portion of the job loss. And so this is, I thought, very useful information. And wanted to see a copy of it for all of us.
Yeah. Absolutely. And one of the questions we have our surveyors asking is asking companies, to what extent are you aware of regional plans? How do you see yourself being affected by them? How do you see yourself being affected, if at all, by regulatory policies in the region? And how would you suggest that those be improved? So we do have a set of questions to try to draw people out who do see themselves as being affected in their location and hiring decisions by regulation, although the numbers suggest that that's a relatively small number in terms of the total number of companies that are hiring or not hiring.
A couple of things. One, I saw that one slide showed 2008, which is already 4 years stale in terms of the data, and so I'm wondering why that was used instead of something more recent. Maybe you don't have any data more recently than that, I guess, would be the answer. But 2008, you know, that's some time ago. And secondly, I would like to get those charts, and I'm wondering if especially I always find this one interesting, the amount of people leaving their county for jobs, and if you can... if it's just a gross number you have there, Sean, or if it's actually directional, because I think it's always interesting for people in transportation to know whether people from their own city or county are going to, you know, where the emphasis is. If it's, you know, people pounding down 680 out of Contra Costa and Alameda, us going down at 880 or across 92 or 84 into San Mateo or Santa Clara County. So if you have that information coupled with that, just that raw number of how many people are leaving their county. So I'd like to, if you have any answers, either one of those questions.
Sure. The numbers, you know, sometimes we just don't have the most current numbers we'd like. The data sources are often lagging by 2 or 3 years. So we're trying to get the most recent data at any one moment that's available, but sometimes it's just going to be 2 or 3 years old, and we have to kind of interpret it and make up for that in other ways. But we will use and are using the most recent data that is out there. The commute patterns, absolutely. I think one or two of those slides might have suggested or hinted that at what we can do in actually identifying what the exact commute patterns are between counties. And so what we generate we'll make a point of going into more detail on that. And if we hear from you along the way that there are particular ways you'd like that cut, we can do that too.
So, Sean, do you have the number of people who are working at home?
I don't.
Percentage of the time that they're not commuting?
I don't think we do, but if you look at that percentage of the people here are in one or two person businesses, about a lot of those are going to be working at home.
It'd be interesting because, you know, when we start looking at transportation issues, and I believe future employment is going to be people not really traveling. So they're going to do a lot of it at home. They're going to, you know, there's not. Everybody has an example of somebody who has a business, one-person business, and has a six or seven people working for them all over the world, right? You know, through because of the computer and the use of opportunity through, you know, being able to move parts quickly around. Mark, and then is there public comments? People want to make a comment? Okay, Mark.
No, it's just that's the question I keep bringing up when I see these. Estimates is the amount of work at home, the amount of piecemeal contracting that businesses are now engaging in so they don't have to rent the retail space and have the brick-and-mortar location. And I always seem to think that it's vastly, as somebody who's in real estate and the property manager, I see people that are working at home a lot more. In fact, I just got a call 2 days ago that my workstation, the cable line doesn't work in the corner of the house I just rented, and that's where I do my work. And she didn't do that 2 years ago. And I think the work at home and the piecemeal contracting is usually seems to be underestimated in these compilations.
It's a good point. We can try to get at that. Good. To the extent we can do it through the data or through interviews, we'll try to come up with something you can wrap your hands around.
So thank you, Sean. We'll look forward to your next report.
Thanks, Tom.
Bruce has got the next item.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll skip the near-term green jobs update in the interest of time, and I'll do a five-minute version on climate and energy resilience. There is a flyer at your seats inviting you. We've invited you also by email to a half-day workshop where we're going to go over a number of issues around climate adaptation in depth. Not a five-minute discussion or a 15-minute discussion, but a good half-day. A number of you have RSVP'd already, and we hope to see more of you on June 7th in this room for that half-day workshop. Let me give you the quick version of the preview so at least you see a little of this before we go public at the workshop. We have been in discussions with a major national foundation, and they're going to invite us probably this afternoon to apply, which means we're in, for a significant funding grant around climate adaptation in the region. Secondly, we are in some pretty interesting discussions at UC Berkeley with three or four college deans and high-level faculty on creating a joint, what they're calling a do tank, not a think tank, on Bay Area regional climate adaptation, a partnership where we would bring practitioners and researchers and policymakers together so we can have the kinds of discussions that we need to have on some very big issues. And third, we've just formed, my counterpart in LA and I formed, and now this has turned into a four-part alliance between the Bay Area, Los Angeles, San Diego, and Sacramento with the Governor's Office of Planning and Research, an alliance of those of us who are leading the collaboratives in each region on climate adaptation, to both learn from each other and to work to create a more formal structure with the state, who have a series of resources for us here. So all of those three big items are aimed at these challenges. We won't discuss them here today. We're going to discuss them at the workshop. You've heard some of these before. How do we do this kind of thing? What kind of decision-making setup do we have on issues that are regional when we have 101 cities, 9 counties, hundreds of special districts? You know, how can we look at financing as an investment in our future that actually is going to be a lot less expensive than some of the damages if we don't prepare and protect ourselves? How can we look at development issues, all of what you were talking about last night for hours and hours and on the SES? How do we work the climate adaptation issues, not just sea level rise, but the others into that thinking over the coming years and mainstream it into planning here? And a series of other challenges. The short term is our report that we're putting together, our briefing paper will be ready, web published June 4th. And we will send it to you then. It's got three chapters on impacts in the Bay Area, summarizing research on Bay Area impacts, secondly, on strategies and stakeholders. So what are the strategies potentially we can use, and who are the stakeholders for each set of topics, and then what are our challenges? I won't go into these in any depth, but here are just examples of the kinds of things we're going to talk about in terms of impacts. And this is from the chapter on extreme events, goes back to your early discussion. We'll be talking about this at the workshop. So the heat wave in 2006, unprecedented here in Northern California. The 1 in 50 years or 1 in 100 year storms for the region that if they happen will provide and produce 90% of the damage that we'll see from climate impacts. You'll see this kind of thing from a couple of the economists that we're going to have at the workshop, that extreme events, yes, we'll have incremental change, but it's extreme events in all of the categories that most of the economists say will produce the real damages in terms of economic damages. And here's an example we won't go in today, but this is on the agricultural front, that as you get some warming, it's actually beneficial to crop yields. These are on three of our biggest crops, corn and soybeans and cotton in California. But you see, when you get to a certain degree point, to an extreme heat event, the yields for these very important crops drop rather dramatically. So again, once you reach a threshold with an extreme event is when you get most of the damage. And again, on the workshop on the 7th, we're going to have the experts here to talk about why this is true and why we have to prepare not only for incremental change, but big events happening as well. Public health, agriculture, a whole series of things. The good news, and you'll see this at the workshop quite a bit, the story is we have a lot of strategies. We are not lacking for strategies. That is not the problem. And you'll see examples at the workshop of groups and organizations, cities, counties, and others who are starting work on these very issues and are already moving ahead with some very exciting and interesting projects. So we're going to tell a good story. We always tell the story of the impacts, which is a difficult story, but we're going to tell the story also on the 7th of a number of spotlights on projects that are really showing us the way and are going to provide inspiration for us in the future. Here again, back from the California report that just came out that I was quoting the other things on extreme events, is their conclusion at the end, and you can see it here, and it's what we're working towards, that it's not a lack of technical solutions. The biggest barriers are going to be institutional, motivational, and economic, and that's what our project is really about. It's about creating a collaborative through the workshop, through the briefing paper that's coming out, and then through a series of one-on-one and small group briefings with you, all of you in this room, probably over June and July and August, and then leading to what we hope is we can reach agreement on a collaborative. What would a structure look like to begin to pull together the right players in the region to start having these discussions? These are long-term issues, these discussions about structure and finance and the other challenges that I listed. And that structure will not be just government. It will be business and government and foundations and universities and community organizations. So that's my report. We hope to see you on the 7th, where we'll be able to really take some time to dive into the issues and also into the solutions here.
Bruce, thank you. Any comments for Bruce? Okay. Looks like that concludes our agenda for today. Do people in the audience wish to take advantage of the opportunity to speak to the Joint Policy Committee? Now's the time to do it. The board comments? Anyone from the board have any comments? I actually have a comment. July the 20th is our next meeting, and I'm unfortunately going to be in Germany. And so Adrian Chisse has agreed to chair the committee and so that on that day. So Adrian, I believe, is actually the vice chair of this committee. So it makes sense. Okay, so thank you all for coming. We're actually... Excuse me? That's right, you can Skype it. I can watch it on Skype. So thank you all for coming. We're actually finishing at noon, which is a miracle. So thank you very much, and we'll see you all on July the 20th. Or I won't see you, but you'll see each other. Yeah.